The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction and fantasy. I am your host, Beverly Prentice. I hope you enjoy the program. If so, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com. Wanted, Personal Demon by Mary Soon Lee. Sought, Fly Shapeshifter. Willing to assume the form of rabbit, raven, raccoon, so neighbors don't suspect. Duties include laying curses upon slugs, snails, litterers, the secretary of the bridge club, and ants who enter the house. Full board and lodging provided, 8 dimensions of your own, meals both mundane and magical, ghosts in adjacent cemetery. A certain degree of malice is customary and convenable, but any harm to the cats will be reversed with interest. Study the attached photo of previous demon inside out, as state, as uncomfortable as it is inconvenient. Cynthia, In the Sub-Flooring, by Christopher Rowe. Cynthia remembered that diagram of a feather and an anvil slowly falling side by side on the moon. If this were the moon instead of her aunt's house, then she would have had time to throw out her hands and catch herself. Maybe on the moon, she would be even strong enough to make the fall into a sort of fantastic push-up. Put palms to the ceramic tile floor, bend her arms, then press and spring back up to a standing position. Instead, she was falling at some certain number of meters per second. Her arms were flying out and her feet were flying up, and the stack of nested terracotta plants she'd been carrying when she rounded the corner was arcing out through the air, thankfully away from her. No, not some certain number of meters per second, but some certain number of meters per second. Meters per second squared. 9.8 meters, now that she remembered. Cynthia hit the floor first with her left cheekbone, then with her right elbow, then with all the twisted rest of her, hot heels coming down last and hard. Then she fell some more. Cynthia's aunt's house was in New Mexico, a big sprawling villa with lots of spaces where Sin couldn't decide whether she was inside or outside. Plants crowded the patios and balconies, and every wall featured a painting of a saint or a niche holding a statue of a saint, or was faced with blue and white tiles showing images from the lives of saints. Cynthia's aunt was not a Catholic, was in fact, like Cynthia, a fallen-away veteran of a particularly bland Midwestern Protestantism. But she was passionately loved everything about what she had always called Old Mexico. Thus the plants, and the verandas, and the saints. Thus the painted ceramic tile floor. Sin fell all the way through. The floor was a wisp of the lemon-scented floor polish applied on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays by Mr. Truitt, the houseman, then a chemical sealant concocted in a Louisiana refinery designed to prevent staining, then the glaze and paint applied atop the barely porous surface of the tile itself, giving it its sheen and color. Then the thick squares of ceramic a material, Sin's aunt frequently reminded her that humans had been working for close to 30,000 years. Then, a matrix of sand and cement that supported and surrounded each tile. Then, a 1-inch layer of gypsum concrete poured around a wire mesh. Then, 2 layers of plywood milled in Western Canada, resting atop a number of parallel 2-inch by 10-inch wood joists, carefully installed 16 inches off-center of one another, extending into the walls at either hand, all of which touched but did not rest upon the upper layer of the similarly complex ceiling of the room below. One of those subfloor spaces, 10 inches deep and 16 inches wide, was where Sin found herself, coated with gypsum dust, when she finally stopped thinking about gravity in terms of meters per second per second. That space was where she was trapped when the Hound of the Afterworld found her. It was impossible for the Hound of the Afterworld to be in the subfloor, but now that Sin thought about it, it was impossible that she had fallen through the tiles and the concrete and the plywood. "We don't deal in possibilities in the Afterworld," said the Hound. "They vex us." The Hound of the Afterworld was nothing but bones and some gristly sinew holding the bones together, since it had no lungs to force air through the larynx, and over vocal cords it also didn't have. Its speech was a peculiar, resonant mix of Sin's memories and environmental sounds. "You sound like Saturday morning," said Sin, thinking of a cartoon about a man in a bluebird suit and a robot dog. "If you say so," said the Hound of the Afterworld. Sin tried to sit up, but discovered she was too hemmed in to get her arms beneath her, and now that she looked, there was smooth, unmarred plywood blocking her from rising anyway. "I really did fall through the floor," she said. "How will they ever find me?" The Hound of the Afterworld leaned over her and brought its hollow eye sockets in line with Sin's gaze. "I found you," it said. And now its voice sounded like crashing terracotta pots. "That's all that matters." Sin knew what that meant. She had seen a lot of movies. "I'm only 33, she said. "I'm only 4 months away from my master's, and I just paid off the Hyundai." These sounded like pretty weak protests, even to her. The Hound of the Afterworld, though, seemed pleased. "Those are facts," it said. "Nothing vexing about facts. Now we're getting somewhere." Sin tried to move again, but still couldn't. "We're not getting anywhere at all," she said. "I concede the point," said the Hound. "I was thinking of the Foreworld, which has already rotated away from here. I didn't define my terms, and I can see where that would be confusing." Sin felt an itch in her lower back she would never be able to get to. "So I'm stuck here, then? In this subfloor?" The Hound of the Afterworld looked around. "It seems very well constructed," it said. "Your aunt spent a lot of money on this place." The itch on her back went away, only to be replaced by one inside Sin's head. "What do you mean, this place?" she asked. "I thought you said the Foreworld had rotated away. Is it my aunt's house in the Foreworld?" Sin was doing her master's in actuarial theory. Rules were very important to her. The Hound sat and cocked its head. It brought one bony rear foot up and scraped its claws against the side of its skull. The noise wasn't pleasant. "You supplied the definitions," it said, but there was a lack of sureness in its voice, where before it had been supremely confident. "That's ridiculous," said Sin. "I don't know anything about how floor tiles are constructed. If I were going to fall through that floor, I would have kept going and landed on the dining room table." The dining room table in her aunt's house was a teak monstrosity with legs carved to look like the heads of Toltec gods. Sin considered it a rare lapse of taste on her aunt's part. The hound of the afterworld must have heard her thinking. It said, "I don't have any argument with the Toltec gods." Then it rushed to change the subject. "You didn't fall all the way through anyway. You're here in the subflooring with me." But Sin had stopped paying attention. She began bucking her hips and kicking her feet as much as she could. "What are you doing?" asked the hound of the afterworld. "You can't get up. That's a fact." "I'm not getting up," said Sin. "I'm going down." The surface below her gave way. Sin fell, and she realized as she did that the afterworld and the foreworld must not be so different, because it seemed to her she was falling right at 9.8 meters per second, which meant that she was falling faster and faster. She could see the hound of the afterworld peering down at her through a hole in the ceiling, which was now a hole in the sky. It looked vexed. Then the hole closed up, and the sky rushed away before a whole world was rushing up. Felly by Julene Brantingham. "My mother didn't raise me to be a mother," Lisa used to apologize, boast whenever something went wrong. "It was all right the first few years, up to 6 months ago, in fact. It was all right because George was there, sturdy, reliable George, who, though she'd never said it out loud because he would have taken it as an insult, was very good at all the things she thought of as maternal. He could put a diaper on so snugly that it wasn't down around the baby's ankles 5 minutes later. He could walk the floor with Vicky all night when she was teething or colicky, and never raised his voice or toss her into the crib and tell her to cry it out. When she was a little older, it was George who could make her smile again after someone had hurt her feelings. It was George who had made her understand why she mustn't steal another child's toys or hit someone with her sand shovel. Lisa always had such good intentions when she sat down to talk to their daughter, but Vicky's eternal, "Why, Mommy, why?" would push her to the point where she'd wind up screaming, "Because you can't, that's all. If I catch you doing it again, I'll blister your bottom." Not that she ever would, of course. Punishment was another thing she left up to George. But George wasn't around anymore. Her fault. He'd been a good husband, even if he was slightly stuffy. But when their daughter began to show that streak of independence, George tried to bring her back into line, and Lisa egged her on. She herself had been an agreeable child, always trying to please others, and it had taken her a long time to get over that. Vicky decided early on that no one was going to push her around merely because he happened to be bigger, stronger, and older. The day Vicky decided she was too old to be spanked was one of the three of them would never forget. When he'd bent her over his knees to punish her for cutting all her dresses to shreds, she'd wet herself and him. He'd gone to a bar that night and got stinking drunk, but he never raised a hand to her again. Lisa had been delighted at his failure to quell the girl's spirit, and she made no secret of it. There had been other incidents. One day George decided he'd had enough of both of them. He'd packed up and moved out. That, in a way, was regrettable because they loved him. They really did. Until 6 months ago, Vicky had lived for Saturday afternoons when George would come to take her out for a few hours. Lisa had always invited him to stay for dinner afterwards. 1 hour a week, they pretended to be a normal family. That was about as long as Lisa and Vicky could keep it up. Anyway, it was the perfect arrangement for the two of them. but Lisa had known it couldn't last. George wanted the real thing 7 days a week, and he finally found it. A widow with two perfect, well-behaved children. George had tried for a while to include Vicky in his new family circle, at least on Saturday afternoons, but Vicky had put a stop to that. She told him one day that she wasn't going to spend any more time with white bunnies. George hadn't understood. After she'd stormed off to her bedroom, he told Lisa, shaking his head, they didn't keep pets. Where could she have gotten an idea like that? Lisa said she'd get it straightened out and that she'd call when Vicky was ready to see him again. That was 6 months ago. George must still be waiting for her call. Vicky seemed to have forgotten she'd even had a father. They were muddling through without him. Lisa hadn't changed. She still had no maternal feelings, but by treating Vicky as she would wish to be treated herself, there had been no major clashes. Plenty of minor ones, of course. Vicky, where did you get this? This was a sort of doll, a green galawag, body made out of knitted material like a sock, limbs grotesquely long, black button eyes, fat red lips of felt that managed somehow to look wet. Lisa almost shuddered as she picked it up off the floor and held it out to her daughter. Outside, Vicky said, eyes still glued to the television. Who does it belong to? Don't know. You find out tomorrow, you hear me? It doesn't belong to you, and you can't keep it. Okay. However, that was only prelude. Lisa didn't see the gollywog again for several days, so she didn't give it another thought. There were other things to think about. Problems at the lab where she worked. An oil bill that had to have one too many zeros in it. A note from Vicky's teacher. Not again. What is she upset about this time? Maybe you're getting bent out of shape over nothing. Maybe she just wants to invite you to the PTA dinner. Is that why she's writing this time? An impish grin. I'm afraid not. George would have started scolding immediately, but Lisa felt an answering smile tugging at the corners of her mouth. When she had been in the fourth grade, she'd been terrified of doing anything to upset her mother or her teacher. The feeling had lasted until her second semester of college, when she realized that was the reason she'd come out of high school with good grades and no education to speak of. Vicky wouldn't take anyone's word about anything. She had to see the proof for herself. Oh, Vicky, the boys' restroom? Why? I wanted to see. I showed you the picture in the anatomy book. Wasn't that enough? Vicky shook her head. The guy in the book was a grown-up. I wanted to see if boys were different. So now you know. And tomorrow you're going to go back to school and tell your teacher that you'll never do it again. Well, of course not, indignantly. I saw all there was to see, and that you're sorry you did it. Mom, she turned it into three syllables. Mrs. Tanner is a silly fusspot. You should have heard her. You're a sick little girl with a filthy, filthy mind. Jeez, just because I wanted to look. I know. She wrote the same thing in her note. Lisa's own morals had also been mentioned. Some women still lived in the dark ages, not only afraid of independence, but afraid of women who had it. Well, then, you know I'm not sick? Of course not. A sense of caution kept her from stating her opinion of Mrs. Tanner. Next time Vicky got into trouble, and there would be a next time, she would remember that and use it, making things worse. But you're going to apologize to Mrs. Tanner and make her believe you mean it. That led to a long, involved argument, as Lisa had known it would. She didn't have enough patience to be a mother, no talent for making her daughter see just what she had to do to get along in this world. In the end, she had to resort to a threat. If Vicky didn't apologize, she wouldn't be allowed to go to the motorcycle races on Saturday. Lisa won with that, but Vicky sulked for the rest of the evening. Vicky apologized to her teacher, The problems at the lab weren't solved, but they were shifted around so they looked like new problems. The oil company proved they'd put the right number of zeros on the bill, and Saturday rolled around. Lisa had to roust her out of bed. "Come on, kid. Housework before races. You take the back of the house and I'll take the front." "Yuck. You take the back. I did the bathroom last week." Lisa abhorred housework, but one thing she had managed to teach Vicky was that neat habits made for less work at chore time. Vicky's bedroom was usually no more of a problem to clean than Lisa's own, but out of habit, she got down to check under the bed. When she'd been Vicky's age, it had been easier to give her socks and underwear a good kick than to carry them to the hamper. And this time, Lisa crawled as far under as she could and managed to snag the dark lump that was lurking there. When she brought it out into the light, she shuddered and almost dropped it. That green gollywog again. "Vicky, come here right now." She heard the vacuum cleaner being turned off, the impatient sigh, the heavy footsteps. "What is it? I'm never going to get my part done if you keep stopping me." "This," Lisa said, holding it out to her, holding it by one leg so it flopped. "I thought I told you to find out who it belonged to and give it back." "I forgot. I'll do it tomorrow." "You'll do it right now." Vicky marched over and snatched the thing out of her hand. "All right, I'll do it now. Jeez, you're making such a big deal out of it. It's just a dumb old doll." "I am," Lisa agreed silently and shamefully as Vicky left the house. "Why am I so upset? It's just an old rag doll that she picked up at a friend's house and forgot to give back. The way I'm carrying on about it..." She looked down and noticed she was wiping her fingers on her pants leg over and over again as if they were covered with a slimy stain. Such an ugly doll. Why would anyone make such a thing? Why would anyone buy it? It was like a character from a nightmare. That putrid green color. Those fat, wet-looking lips. As Vicky would say, "Yuck." Vicky didn't come back for almost an hour. And when she did, she still had the gollywog. "Don't yell at me," she grumbled. "I asked everyone, and they all said it didn't belong to them. It must be Jill's, and they're not home. I'll take it over tomorrow." "You could have left it in the mailbox." "Okay, I could have, but I didn't think of it. Do you want me to go back?" "Stop making such a big deal of nothing," Lisa told herself. "No, just put it down somewhere. Look, I'll help you finish the living room, and then we'll have time to stop for a hamburger on the way to the races, okay?" "Okay," Vicky said grudgingly, accepting the unspoken apology. Lisa was troubled, not so much by the doll, but by her own reaction to it. She did have strong feelings about dolls, dating from the time when George could think of no other present to give his daughter. "You're forcing her into a mold, telling her how she should behave, what she should like, what she has to do to make you love her." "You're talking crazy," he said. "I'm just giving her presents. All little girls like dolls." "Crap. Little girls are told they should like dolls, but our daughter is going to have the chance to make up her own mind." So while George gave her dolls and tea sets and doll houses, Lisa gave her toy cars and building blocks and sports equipment. When Vicky showed a slight preference for the cars and blocks and balls, Lisa gleefully tossed out all the little girly things. "Her toy box isn't very big," she told George. "There's only enough room to keep the things she plays with often." When Vicky played at a friend's house, Lisa would sometimes see her pick up a doll, cuddle it a few moments, then toss it aside. As she grew older, she even lost interest in girls who played with dolls. It was usually Vicky who had led the pack of tricycle terrorists, the tree climbers, and the sandbox construction crews. Why had she picked up that awful rag doll and brought it home? Well, the thing would be gone tomorrow. Lisa warned herself not to make a fuss about it and gave it the status of a forbidden pleasure. Sunday morning, Vicky watched television. The doll sprawled, forgotten on the sofa where she had dropped it. Lisa forced herself to say nothing, but by mid-afternoon, she couldn't stand it anymore. "Hey, Brat, I'm going over to see Jill's mother. Want to come along?" "Sure," Vicky said, scrambling up off the floor. They were halfway out the door when Vicky stopped. "Just a minute," she said. She came back carrying the gollywog. "But you thought I'd forget," she said with a grin. "It had completely slipped my mind," Lisa lied, convincing neither one of them. Lisa had a cup of coffee with Nancy, Jill's mother, who took care of Vicky after school. When Vicky found out the boys, her usual playmates, were at a ball game with their father, she disappeared into a bedroom with Jill, a chubby little girl with blonde curls. Lisa and Nancy made small talk. It was a social obligation Lisa usually neglected. When the cups were empty and she felt enough time had passed, Lisa got up, trying not to sigh with relief. "Come on, Vicky," she called. "We have to be going." There was no answer from the bedroom. Lisa and Nancy walked back, commiserating with each other about children who didn't come when called. The girls were having a tea party on the floor. Propped against the furniture were several dolls as blonde and chubby as Jill. Vicky, all knobbly knees and sharp elbows, was holding the gollywog on her lap. They both looked out of place. "We have to go home now," Lisa said softly, determined not to show how startled she was. Her daughter looked up, a distant, unreadable expression on her face. Still holding the doll, she stood up and came toward the door. "You have Jill's doll. Give it back, dear." Jill shook her head. "That's not mine," she said. "Are you sure? Vicky, didn't you say you thought you picked it up here the other day when you were playing with Jill?" Vicky didn't answer. Nancy was looking from mother to daughter as if she sensed undercurrents. "Maybe she did," Jill said, "but it isn't mine. I found it out in the yard a while ago. I don't know where it came from, and I don't want it. Ugly old thing. I like my new dolls better. Vicky can keep it if she wants." She picked up one of the blonde baby dolls, rocked it in her arms, and cooed at it. Vicky did the same with the green gollywog. Lisa almost gagged at the sight, but she managed to turn away, make polite noises at Nancy, and walk out of the house. I will not make a fuss about that damn doll," she thought. "I will not ask Vicky why she is acting this way. She's just doing it to upset me. I won't let her see that she's succeeding." Vicky continued to cuddle the doll when she went back to watch television. When Lisa called her for dinner, she dropped it into a chair and seemed to forget about it. After dinner, she hauled her Erector set out of the closet and worked on some spider-like construction until it was time for bed. All evening, Lisa sat on the sofa, going over some reports, while in the chair on the opposite side of the room, black button eyes gleamed at her. Red lips of felt seemed impossibly to glisten. Even the sprawl of the grotesquely long limbs was obscene, threatening. After Vicky kissed her goodnight, Lisa put aside the reports, put aside the pretense that she could read the words written on the page. She returned her gollywog's glare. It had to be some sort of delayed reaction to the divorce, to the separation from her father, Lisa decided. Vicky had seemed to understand at the time, and it had been her own idea to end the visits to George's new family. Maybe they shouldn't have allowed it. Maybe Vicky needed something, some kind of affection or security that she wasn't getting from her mother. Maybe this fascination with the ugly doll would end if she started seeing her father again. "And maybe I'm making something out of nothing," she thought. "But it won't hurt to give George a call in the morning." She went to bed to dream of gollywogs capering on long floppy legs and grinning with wet red lips. Vicky didn't go near the doll for a couple of days. She seemed not to notice it was still in the chair where she'd left it. Lisa didn't say anything, didn't even ask her to move it. Then one evening toward the middle of the week, after Vicky had gone to bed, Lisa noted that there were no black button eyes gleaming at her from across the room. On a hunch, she checked her daughter's bedroom. Vicky was sound asleep, her cheek touching the gollywog's head. Shuddering, Lisa eased it out from under her arm and dropped it, not in the garbage can, which had been her first thought, but on the floor by the bed. Then she gave it a kick. If Vicky remembered it in the morning, she would probably think she'd knocked it under the bed herself. And there was a chance she wouldn't remember, that it would lie there, getting dustier and dustier, until Lisa could safely take it out and throw it away. George had been delighted to include Vicky in his plans for Saturday afternoon. He was taking his family to the zoo. Vicky took the news with no perceptible show of emotion, even allowed herself to be coaxed into wearing a dress. Lisa thought that catering to George's prejudice just this once might not be a bad idea. It would be awkward after they'd been apart so long. When the car pulled up in front of the house shortly before noon, Vicky reached for her coat, said goodbye as if she were going off to her own funeral. Lisa almost managed to convince herself this had been necessary, that the thing with the doll had been a passing whim. Vicky was getting along fine without her father. It was the thought of seeing him again and the white bunnies that had depressed her. "Hello, kitten, ready to go?" She looked around the room as if trying to remember something. "Just a second. There's something I have to get," she said. She ran back to her bedroom and came out carrying the gollywog. Lisa's heart sank. "What's this?" George asked in his overhearty paternal voice. Vicky looked more cheerful than she had in days. She was almost glowing as she held up the doll for her father to see. "This is Felly, my doll," she said. "Goodbye, Mum. Cute little thing, isn't it? Where did you get him?" George asked as they stepped out onto the porch. "Oh, Daddy, Felly's a girl. Can't you?" The voices faded away. Lisa went to the kitchen and took the half-full bottle down from the shelf where she kept it hidden. Only George could think a thing like that was cute. And Vicky? Did she think so, too? Apparently so. It had graduated to the status of having a name and a sex. Lisa very seldom drank anything stronger than wine, but that afternoon she finished the bottle of bourbon George had forgotten to pack when he moved out. It seemed the only possible accompaniment for her sense of failure. She wasn't very maternal. She'd always admitted that, but they'd been getting along all right, hadn't they? They had been until that doll came along, she thought, knowing she was being unreasonable. She couldn't put the blame on a floppy, lifeless rag doll, but she did. Where had it come from? They were supposed to be back at 5. At 6, she got a phone call. They were having such a good time that they decided to have dinner, would maybe take in a movie after. Lisa regretted the fact that the bottle was now empty. At 9:30, when Vicky came in and stopped the door to wave goodbye to George and the others, Lisa noticed that her eyes were bright and her cheeks were pink. She closed the door, hugged Felly to her chest, and whirled around the room. "Oh, Mom, we had such fun. Daddy took us to the petting zoo, too, and we saw the sweetest baby fawns and baby lambs." Lisa couldn't help herself. "And how were the baby bunnies?" Vicky looked puzzled. "There weren't any baby bunnies," she said. "Oh, Mom, look what Daddy bought for Felly. He said she should have something to show people she's a girl. Isn't it pretty?" She waved the doll, now wearing a broad pink ribbon around its scrawny neck in Lisa's face. "Simply darling," Lisa said. In the next few weeks, things went from bad to worse. Though Lisa had to admit that was only her opinion, everybody else seemed to be perfectly content with the change. Vicky was quieter, less opinionated, less curious about the things other people didn't want her to be curious about. She started wearing dresses again, tied her hair back with ribbons, sat properly in a chair instead of sprawling on the floor when she watched television. There were no more notes from her teacher, no complaints from the neighbors about fights. And always, that ugly green gollywog dangled from her arms. "It's not the doll," Lisa told herself. "I'm not so crazy. I think a rag-stuffed doll is warping my daughter's mind. It's the divorce. She's just having a delayed reaction to that. She's afraid her father will stop loving her. She's trying to be what he wants her to be so she can keep his love. She'll get over it. I'm not upset." Liar, she thought. "I'm terrified. I'm losing her. I thought I was doing something right. She was going to turn out different from me, stronger. Whatever the reason is, she's rejecting me. Everything I've won for myself, for her. She's wrecking that, falling right into the mold everyone else wants her to fit." Lisa no longer thought about stealing Feli for some time when Licky was asleep, dropping her it into the garbage can. She wanted to run it through the disposal, burn it, hack it to pieces with her carving knife. "Stop being ridiculous," she told herself. Every time she saw it, it grinned at her, wetly. One evening she was frying hamburgers. Vicky sat at the table, prattling about a dress someone at school had been wearing. The grease popped, burning Lisa's hand, and she swore. When she turned, she saw Vicky staring at her, mouth open, her eyes wide, and her hands clamped over the place where Feli's ears would have been if rag dolls had ears. "What's wrong with you?" Lisa demanded. "What you said," Vicky said in a shocked voice. "It's not nice for a lady to use words like that." She seemed to be perfectly serious. That night, Lisa did something she hadn't done since high school. She cried herself to sleep. Vicky was spending not just Saturday afternoons, but entire weekends with George and his family. She came home talking about ballet shoes and charm bracelets. For the Christmas play, she was given the role of an angel to play. Other years, she'd held out for a donkey or at least a shepherd. This year, she couldn't wait to try on her wings and halo. On Valentine's Day, she got cards from every boy in class. Four of them were handmade, with globs of paste still showing on the paper doilies. She taped those to the walls of her room, and Lisa heard her sigh when she looked at them. Feli was starting to look fat. Vicky hugged her. It, so much, she must have squeezed all the stuffing down to its stomach. Every report card she brought home showed an A in conduct. And as the school year came to an end, she acted nervous when Lisa mentioned summer camp. Lisa tried to convince herself she didn't know what was on her mind. But it was no surprise. When George came to pick her up one Friday evening and then stood in the living room, shifting about as if his feet hurt. There were noises from the bedroom, but Vicky didn't come out. "Something on your mind, George?" He cleared his throat, looked at the floor. "Well, yes. Edna and I, that is, Vicky wanted me to ask you." He seemed to be choking on the words. "She wants to live with you." "Just for the summer," he said quickly. "Edna and I do think it would be better for her. You're away at work all day. It's not good for a girl that age to be alone so much of the time." "If that's what Vicky wants." She went to her bedroom and shut the door. Didn't come out again until she was sure they were gone. Even having the decision made didn't ease Vicky's nervousness. She was even more quiet than usual, sometimes hugged Lisa for no apparent reason. But neither of them could talk about the thing that had come between them. And then it was the morning of the last day. They'd been up packing until past midnight. Vicky had wanted so much to take with her. New dresses and hair ribbons, a dozen pairs of shoes, a charm bracelet, her valentines, the dollhouse George had given her for her birthday. And Feli, fat Feli with a lump in its belly. But of course, that wouldn't go into a suitcase. Vicky would carry it with her, as always. George was to come by at 8 o'clock. At 7, the alarm rang. Lisa turned it off, but couldn't force herself out of bed. At 7:30, she told herself she should, really should, see that Vicky had a hot breakfast before she left. At 7:45, the bedroom door opened just a crack, and Vicky peeked inside. She looked like a doll herself, one of the pretty ones. Her hair was shiny from careful brushing, tied back with a pink ribbon. She was wearing one of her new summer dresses, one that George's wife had bought her. It looked as if it would fall apart if Vicky even thought about climbing trees. But of course, Vicky didn't do those things anymore. "Come on in, brat," Lisa croaked. "Maybe you'd better not come too close. I think I'm catching a cold. Don't want to take a chance on spoiling the start of your vacation." Vicky came over and kissed her anyway. From where she was lying, Lisa couldn't see Felly, but she thought that was just as well. She didn't want to look at the things she still felt, irrationally, had been the cause of the change in her daughter. It was typical of Vicky's new thoughtfulness that she held it behind her back. "You don't have a cold. You've been crying." "Yeah? Well, I'm allowed sometimes. Mom, I'm not going away forever, just a couple months." When she came back, would there be anything left of the bright-eyed little brat who'd sneaked into the boys' restroom just to see? "Yeah, I know. I'll miss you anyway." No, she thought, that isn't true. She thought of all things left in her closet when Vicky had finished packing. The jeans, the erector set, the football, the baseball bat, the sneakers. The little girl who had worn and used those things, that was the girl Lisa would miss. Did this Vicky remember her, or was she ashamed to think how she used to be? "I don't want you to be lonely, Mom," Vicky said. "I have a present for you. It's from Felly and me, to keep you company." They heard the sound of the front door opening, George calling. "He's here," Vicky said unnecessarily. She slipped something under Lisa's pillow. "Don't get up. I'll call you tonight. Bye." A quick kiss, and she was gone. Lisa couldn't move. She couldn't even cry anymore. She'd always said she wasn't very good at the job of motherhood, and here was the proof, if anyone needed it. A good mother would have... what? She didn't even know what a good mother would have done to keep from losing her child. But then, a good mother wouldn't have felt she was losing this child. There was a lump under her neck, Vicky's present. Tiredly, she rolled over and lifted the pillow. What was it? She picked up the warm, egg-shaped thing and weighed it in her hand. It was about the size of her palm, of some sort of knitted material, seamless and firm. "Felly laid an egg," she thought, smiling, then bursting into delighted laughter. Maybe she hadn't lost. This was surely one of the old Vicky's bright ideas. It had to have been Vicky's idea. George had no sense of humor. Yes, a joke, meant to tell her not to take this transformation too seriously, that she was just doing it for whatever reason, and would be back soon, just as she had been before. Where had it come from? Some sort of magic store or toy shop? Lisa hugged it to her chest, then held it out to look again. It really did look like the sort of egg a rag doll might lay. What a delicious joke on George and all the rest of them. And then the fabric split. A tiny green limb poked out.